Good morning and welcome to another episode of Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan and with us all the way from Amman, Waleed Shihabi. Welcome, Waleed.
Good morning. Good morning.
Today we're going to be talking Starbucks, the Middle East franchise Al-Shaya is going to cut over 2,000 jobs in line with the Gaza boycotts, according to Reuters. And then a Google engineer has the entire world talking about him. You're going to find out why up next. Both Bitcoin and gold rose to an all-time high. And then stay tuned. We've got Carlos and Francesca of CG Barbershop, a husband and wife duo joining us in the studio after this. What is it like to work together as a husband and wife? We're going to be talking about that. Waleed,
recording in progress.
Good to see you. It's been a while since Step. How are you doing?
Yes.
How are you doing?
It's been a difficult few weeks, actually. You guys made it to Qatar to the Web Summit, which is awesome. Unfortunately, I missed that one, but got my updates from you guys.
It was incredible, honestly. I was really impressed. It was my first time ever in Doha, and I heard really good things about it, but you just could not help but be impressed by Doha, honestly. Have you been before?
I've been, yes, many times, most recently to the World Cup, actually, and that was an awesome event. But certainly, I think a huge coup to host the Web Summit in Qatar. I think, you know, there's a lot of momentum behind, you know, the startup scene, the technology scene in the Middle East. We met up in the STEP conference in Dubai, and then the week after, you guys were at Web Summit. And then this week, we have LEAP in Saudi Arabia, which is another huge event in the industry. So, you know, it's all awesome for companies like ourselves in this space. Just to focus so much energy and attention to
developments. Yeah, absolutely. I forgot to introduce you, Waleed, by the way. I'm so sorry. I guess you need no introduction, but I'm going to introduce you anyway. Waleed Shihabi, of course, is the co-founder of Keeper, Rent Now, Pay Later. It's both for property owners and consumers like myself, and a former investment banker, of course. So Waleed is going to be my co-host once a week, every Wednesday. Are you sure you're up for it, Waleed?
I'm enjoying it a lot. You know, so far, and you know, if you think we're doing a good job, then by all means.
Okay, brilliant. Let's go ahead and you know what? Before we dive into the news today, yesterday I attended an event by an advisory called Tough Love. And they're brilliant. They're doing a great job. But the event yesterday, Osman Sultan, who is obviously the former CEO of Du, pretty big guy, pretty well known, prominent, respected in the industry. He gave a 45-minute speech. I kid you not, 45 minutes about digital and the industrial revolution. I mean, if you're talking about digital, surely you know that people don't have the attention span to listen to you go on and on about, you know, about the industrial revolution. yeah, it was a little bit ridiculous to me because it obviously, you know, he missed the entire point of his own speech.
That's interesting that you say that, and I recall from a previous episode also about, you know, how much shorter our attention span is these days and what we try to fit into any given hour. I think I'm on the whole podcast fiction space, and it becomes about, you know, how much can you fit in and how much knowledge can you fit in the time.
Absolutely.
If you want to keep up with what's going on. So certainly short and sweet and punchy probably beats, you know, long historical narrative. So
yeah.
It's okay. Get to the point, get to it quickly, you know, get to the point of that.
Exactly. And you know what? There were no chairs even. And I know Khaled is not going to be happy about this. Khaled is one of the partners, of course, of Tough Love. But I'm going to give him some tough love. Khaled, next time you throw an event, Please think of us women. Put some chairs, Khaled. We were all in heels and we were suffering. Think of us next time, please. Right.
Must mean it was a popular event.
Yes, true, true. No, it was great. Right, so Starbucks Middle East, the franchisee Al Shaya is going to cut over 2,000 jobs. That's according to Reuters. Al Shaya obviously owns the group, the rights to operate Starbucks in the Middle East. It's going to lay off more than 2,000 people as the business suffers from consumer boycotts linked to the Gaza genocide, and we insist on calling it a genocide. Other people call it a conflict, other people call it a war. It is a genocide in our eyes, and that's pretty clear. People familiar with the matter told Reuters that the cuts apparently began on Sunday and amount to about 4% of Al Shaya's total workforce, which is almost 50,000 people. And the layoffs are mostly concentrated in the Starbucks franchise in the MENA region, according to sources. This was bound to happen, I think. And we spoke about this earlier with Richard, and he was disagreeing with me that companies like Starbucks or Al Shaya don't need to take a stance when it comes to the Gaza situation. But I disagreed. What are your thoughts, Waleed, on this?
Well, I think it's not surprising. I think the impact's been significant to the regional and local operations for a specifically the Starbucks. I think in the eyes of consumers, the association was too strong, and that the boycott was extremely effective. The unfortunate part of the impact of such boycott would be on the workforce.
On the workforce, yes.
On the local workforce. Mm-hmm. Right? So this is where the unfortunate part of the impact. But I believe that the businesses in the region, this could be actually a boon and has been a boon for domestic businesses, for domestic roasters and coffee shops and specialty coffee houses, which we've seen, pop up and succeed. So I would say that there is an opportunity for that industry to absorb well-trained staff. So the net impact doesn't have to be negative. But this definitely shows that the depth of the impact of the boycott has had on such brands. And not just Starbucks, but I think Starbucks tends to in the head of the spear when it comes to people's association with positions that they were far from where we stand.
Absolutely. That's an incredible point. We lost you a little bit there, Waleed, so I'm just going to repeat to people just that one line that you said. Unfortunately, people are losing their jobs, people from the MENA region, but it did not have to be this way. You said now is the time for local brands to step forward. And you know what, in Russia, when the war started with Ukraine, that's exactly what Timothy and his partner did. Timothy is a music producer and rapper, and people were not kind of taking him seriously in the business space. And then he, together with his partner, bought all the assets for Starbucks and turned it into Starz Coffee. So I think Al Shaya really had the opportunity to do that. It's not too late. Maybe they can still do that. Do they really have to lay off all those people, or can they just take the Starbucks assets and do the same thing that that they did in Russia? Give, you know, granted the circumstances are different, they can still do that.
Certainly. I think the circumstances definitely are different, but that may eventually be a viable alternative, is to repurpose the existing assets or create a new brand. It'll depend on how far this bites and how long this this goes, but I think it runs deep. So this, what you mentioned, might be actually a viable path.
Absolutely. And Howard Schultz of Starbucks, of course, made it absolutely worse. Yesterday, he wrote a rather ambiguous post on LinkedIn, something to do with soul searching, very kind of Very ambiguous, although the message was pretty clear. He said, and I quote, "There is no textbook or guidelines to follow to build a company and a brand with a soul," he said. It's about never succumbing to economic pressures. I will say, have a soul, Howard. That is all I will say. He said, you know, the world is seemingly on fire. It is actually on fire, at least it is in Gaza. Clearly, he doesn't care about the genocide. He cares about the business. And wrong take again, wrong stance yet again.
Yeah, I would agree. And I think the credibility is down to negative territory, I think, when it comes to that particular spokesperson. So, listen, it's a tricky line to follow, but I think people who search their souls properly and understand the implications of their words and their actions, or even attempt to be fair in their judgment.
Absolutely. We don't want to get too political on this show, but you know, it's inevitable that that business and politics are intertwined. This leads me to my next story. A Google engineer protested Project Nimbus at the an Israeli tech conference, Mind the Tech, yesterday. He yelled out, "I refuse to build technology that powers genocide." He interrupted Google Israel Managing Director Barak as he spoke on stage at Mind the Tech in New York. He yelled, "No cloud for apartheid, no tech for apartheid," as he was escorted out of the conference. He was referring, of course, to Google's Project Nimbus, a $1.2 billion cloud computing contract between Israel's government, Google, and Amazon, and it was announced in 2021. Barak then continued his speech on stage, stating, "I'm privileged to work in a company which represents democratic values." Then another attendee also protested. She yelled, "Free Palestine," before being roughly escorted out of the venue. And then Barak had to end his remarks early. But users on X, formerly Twitter, everyone keeps calling it Twitter. I think it's time for Elon Musk to just change the name back.
Let's call it X-Twitter.
X-Twitter.
Yeah.
Exactly. But users on the platform argued that the main takeaway from the video is the overwhelming reaction from the rest of the crowd. If you see the video without any context, you would think that the engineer is crazy. That's according to one of the users on Twitter. He said, but in fact, those around booing him and telling him to get out are complacent in helping with the genocide. So people around were booing, telling him to get out, yelling at him. It is an Israeli tech conference. So what else can you expect? Employees at Google, over 600 Google workers, signed a letter demanding Google to drop its sponsorship of the annual conference, which has been promoting Israeli tech. Obviously Israel has seen economic downturn because of Gaza. This conference was supposed to kind of promote Israeli tech. But the opposite thing happened. This one Google engineer has the entire world talking about him. He's really proof that
employee activism, I think, is really effective. Mm-hmm. It's people from within the company that the company has hired to have taken this. I think it tends to be extremely effective. I think Google's had to struggle with many issues in recent months, and their exposure to this particular project has really stood out. I think they've got a lot to deal with going forward, but it's not surprising given the scale of Google. But I think most people within Google do not want to be associated with a politically negative association of government project of this nature. Most people, I believe, within Google don't want that association.
Yep.
I think they're not.
You're cutting off a little bit there, Walid, but it's a great point that you're making, and I think the main takeaway from this is that companies do need to take a stance on this. You know, it's kind of inevitable. You know, they do have to do that.
People within the company represented, and I think these people want their voices to be heard, that they refuse this this project and this association. And you know, I believe it's the right thing to do in an entity as big and as powerful as Google.
Absolutely. I'm going to take you away from politics now, Walid. Don't worry. I'm going to take you away from that. Let's go to Bitcoin. So Bitcoin.
Bitcoin is back.
Bitcoin is back.
We thought that we could get away with dismissing Bitcoin a little bit as it fell during the last year, but it's very much back and it's very much in the limelight. And we have to deal with it. I think the fact that it was to a large degree legitimized for investors through the, you know, there was an ETF, an exchange traded fund program that got accepted to be listed on exchanges where you could get exposure to Bitcoin directly in American stock exchanges was a huge boon for it. And it's practically become a legitimate asset class for investors globally today.
Absolutely. Who would have thought? Who would have thought? I'm going to quickly just talk about the price. It's the world's largest cryptocurrency. It surpassed the previous record set in November 2021. It topped $69,000, a new all-time high. U.S. finance giants are buying billions worth of bitcoins. And it then fell back to $62,000. I think it's back at $66,000. Now, if I'm not mistaken, its value rose by over 50% in the past month. Walid, have you ever invested in cryptocurrency?
I'm afraid I have not, and it's out of policy because I never had a full understanding of you know, its utility. What is it really there for? Is it anything more than a speculative trading instrument? Can I use it in any way other than to buy and store it and so on? And I never got to a conclusion of that, but I've been following it very very closely, and I have invested in listed exchanges of crypto currencies as, you know, as my bet on the on a small bet on the sector, and it's been a successful trade. I think it's getting more and more legitimate as an instrument over time. I think what we've seen over not just the last year, but I would extend it to 10 years, is that we've gotten constant interest in it as it went down. It's sort of established itself as a kind of wealth preservation instrument or asset. And, you know, it's like I said, it's legitimization to some degree by allowing ETFs to list on U.S. exchanges of Bitcoin. I think really established the story right now. It's become a conventional asset, and probably, you know, people's retirement funds today do have some exposure to that asset. So that's as legitimate as you can make it.
Absolutely. Speaking of legitimate and conventional assets, gold is also thriving during times. So it generally thrives during times of lower interest rates, and it rose to an all-time high as much as 1.3% to $2,141 per ounce yesterday on Tuesday. The previous record was $2,135, and that was set 3 months ago.
It's funny, people who would promote Bitcoin historically would promote it as the alternative to gold. And it's interesting that they seem to be moving in the in the same direction, and probably for some of the same reasons.
Absolutely. I mean, hey, I haven't invested in crypto, but gold They say diamonds are forever. I say it's gold. Gold is forever. Indeed. Waleed, I wish we had more time. It's always a fascinating conversation with you. Thank you so much for joining us today, and we will see you next Wednesday.
I'm looking forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Waleed. Up next, stay with us, guys. A husband and wife duo joining us in the studio after this, Carlos and Francesca of CG Barbershop. Do we need another barbershop? We're going to find out. Stay tuned. Carlos and Francesca, welcome to the studio. I wish we could talk about what we were talking about
It's probably
before
best that we don't.
probably best that we don't. So you're a husband and wife duo of a CG
Barbershop.
Barbershop.
That's right.
Do we need another barbershop?
Expanding, you mean?
No, generally, there are so many barbershops in Dubai.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to open another barbershop, and what sets you guys apart?
Yeah, because like that's what I've been doing my whole life, and the French actually believed in me when I had this idea, and we opened it, but we know how to run it, and thanks to God, it was like a not easy journey. It was really hard because like after we opened, 6 months, there was COVID, and Dubai is a very tough place in terms of the market, and as you said, like too many barber shops. But it comes down to technicality and operation and management. Yeah.
I think it was. I think looking back, the experience is quite different for me because I don't come from a retail background or a salon background. I've never really been in a men's barbershop. But when we met, I think 7 years ago, 8 years,
it
feels way longer. But when we met, I was working in events. And I remember having really clear discussions when we set up the barbershop. We never talked about like making money, or it was
Yeah,
just
it
all he
wasn't
wanted to
really,
have
you
was
know.
the best technical barbershop in the country.
I
That
just
was it.
succeed, yeah.
And I think
And you
because,
stood by his
yeah,
side.
and I think because,
Yeah.
and everyone was like, why are you going to invest in this? Why are you going to do it? I said, well, if you've met him, you'll know he's number one, the most kind of passionate person when it comes to the craft of barbering. Number two, he's one of the like the most focused hard workers. So if I'm
He's blushing right now.
Yeah, but you
Yeah.
know, I said, if I'm going to put my money behind anyone, it's him.
Thank you.
And so I think that we just had this very clear goal of creating something really unique, something very technical, something that was really based around craft. And then we didn't think about the money, and it was just let's focus on that and then start to build it. And we started off with Carlos cutting hair and me on the reception trying to figure out how to work the
Yeah, in the
system.
beginning, it was like 3 weeks, I would bomb myself.
Yeah. And now we look at the team, I think we've got 16, 17.
Right. By the way, I have to say, I love that line. We didn't think about the money.
We didn't.
It's a great title for a podcast, I think.
Yeah.
We didn't think
We
about the
never
money.
did.
Love it.
Yeah, like money always that runs faster when you chase it.
Yeah.
Do what you love and like it will find you.
Yeah.
But if you chase it, it will always run faster.
Yeah.
And I think also,
Right.
You know, a lot of friends of ours or people, even clients we speak to in the barbershops, I know, what advice would you give? I said, it takes twice as much money and twice as much effort to get half as way far that you think you can. And I mean, even now, 4.5 years down, we still invest everything back into the business. Otherwise, you plateau. You have to
Yeah,
keep investing your staff, buying, you know, even little things like improving like the health insurance that we offer our employees so they
Right.
actually feel valued. You know,
Absolutely.
it's not like, oh, I'm just working, you know, in a barbershop, but they actually feel that they're valued. We have like quarterly staff meetings. We try and do incentives. We've got a big yacht party coming up in
Oh.
2 months where we hire a big yacht. We take out our favorite clients,
Oh, lovely.
Which is all of them, but you know, we can only fit so many people on
You're
a boat.
invited.
Yeah.
You're invited.
Yeah.
You can join us.
I was wondering if my invite was going
Yes,
to come
it will be
through.
on the way.
Thank
Of
you.
course,
Thank you,
of course.
Carlos.
Like a DJ and like food and
Yeah.
like lots of activities.
Yeah.
We got even magician.
Yeah, we always try
Oh,
and do like
nice.
separate
Wow,
different
lovely.
things,
Lovely.
you know.
Okay, I'm loving it. It's making me want to take the rest of the day off and just go
Hang in the barbershop,
chill
yeah.
on a yacht or something. So you guys are a husband and wife duo. I'm gonna talk a little bit about that a bit later on, but first, your background is in events. Carlos, what is your background?
Since I was four, I was saying that I'm going to be a barber because my father, my grandfather, and since 1913, we're all barbers. So,
Oh, wow.
yeah, my
Lovely.
father actually, he was like really focused to direct us from like very early age. My two brothers are still working at barbers with my father, but I don't know, like when I was very young, because my father was my hero. So I was saying to my neighbor that, yeah, I'm going to be a barber when I grow up. And,
That's
what I've been doing my whole life. And yeah, we finished, like in Egypt is like a bit different because like you have to be one of four things, like doctor, officer, engineer, or disappointment. So I have a bachelor's degree in computer science and management information systems, so I'm enough. Mm-hmm. Then now I'm working, but we all work like, even my father, he's like retired from the high school. He was like but it's like what we have been doing and what we do the best is like barbering. Like we cut hair for a living and that's what we do.
That's an iconic line. Being half Palestinian, yes. I completely agree with you. You are either a doctor, or lawyer, engineer, or a disappointment. Guess which one I am. Right. How many barbershops do you guys have? Is it just one right now?
Yeah, we have one in Media City.
You don't need to have more than one, do you? What are your plans for expansion? Is one enough?
We expanded the business actually in the location we're at last year. So we're in the Arjan Rotana Hotel in Media City, which is a fantastic location. Our guests get free valet parking, which, you know, for men is quite important than ours.
So we have to
park absolutely. And get your haircut. Absolutely. We're looking at expanding in 2025. I think one of the concerns for me from an operational point of view in the current market is that commercial real estate has really increased. And obviously, you know, from a barbershop point of view, you've got to keep a mind on operating costs. And with the rents, I will say, as inflated as they are, we're really looking into what would be the right location. It doesn't make sense opening close to where we are. You just end up cannibalizing your customers, the customers that will come to Media City would just drive to the Palm. So we were looking somewhere around downtown, but as I say, the location is proving a little tricky in terms of current rental market. So we're keeping an eye on things. We have
I
some
hope the
plans.
Landlord is listening.
No, our landlord's very good. We don't need to worry about that. potential future landlord that is looking
problematic. You know, like we have two different, angle. So Fran, when she thinks about expanding, she look at the business in terms of like the numbers and like how it works. But for me to expand the business is like really hard because it's technicality is very important. And like, it's very hard to have very technical, talented barbers everywhere in the world. Like good barbers are very rare. And for us, like people, they will not stop cutting hair anyway.
Sure.
Like, yeah, there's 800 barbershops in town, but around like 10 barbers or 20. Real barbers.
Yeah.
The rest, I don't know what they're doing.
True.
But people, they will still cut their hair. Like, I'm not going to be able to cut the every entire man in the city, right? So for me, because I'm very passionate, I cannot have like someone cuts hair that I know that he's not efficient enough to satisfy me as like be watching. And but there are some people that they look at it as it's pure business and generating money, and people, they will never stop cutting hair. But for us, like I think it's gonna take time because we educate and we work on
it's difficult. I mean, to look at our business from a franchise model point of view, I don't think necessarily works, because quality control, I mean, the way that we've managed to get so many reviews, all 5-star, the way that we've managed to maintain this word of mouth, so we have so many new clients,
is
because we offer a really excellent service. The minute you start franchising and expanding quickly, the one thing that gets jeopardized is your service.
Cover all that talent for that chairs for like these barbers, like barbershops with the same kind of quality. So people, they have to drop the standard of quality in the sake of making money. And you got people, they work in franchise and they keep telling from like, we are waiting for you to sell your soul, which is okay. Like, but again, like there is two business models, Mastige and Prestige. Mastige, like open the barbershop in every city, every corner, and you will be working, or to have like one
Flagship.
La Maison, you know,
and then grow the brand around that, whatever that looks like. I mean, honestly, I think we're at a real tipping point with the business now in deciding which way we're going to go. And I can't say definitively that we've made an answer because we're so busy day to day running the business.
It's a good problem to have.
It is a good problem to have.
Let's talk about you guys are a husband and wife duo, and you're working together. What is that like?
Look, people keep saying that you have to separate being like the personal life or like marriage from business. That will never happen because like even if we're not working together and she's stressed in events and I'm stressed in barber shop, I have to bring it home because like she's the only person that I have to, like I can't talk to or ask for advice.
That's a great
like, people
point.
They say like, oh bro, like you have to separate that. That will never happen. This is like a dream, a good dream to have, but it will never happen. So it comes down to communication and and understanding. So she's really good at what she does. I'm really good at what I do. I know, more importantly, what I'm not good at. She the same. And I don't interfere.
We don't interfere.
Yeah, and it works perfectly.
It's almost like we work separate jobs. It's really strange. Like sometimes he'll come home. I've been in the shop. I'm like, how was work today? Because I don't know what he's doing.
Right.
He doesn't
it's
know
totally
what I'm doing.
School of work.
Wow. And I don't need to, like, I very rarely will be like, can I do this? He'll just say, you lead, I follow. Do whatever. I trust you.
And
you lead, I follow is the secret to a successful marriage, isn't it?
Exactly.
And also, he has no interest in all the paperwork and all the stuff I do anyway.
if you look at it, the impact that actually we have in our marriage because of our business is positive impact. Mm-hmm. Because if that business was a failure, it would be like a disaster. Think about it. If you open a business,
so it's your motivation to
Because like we made it, and we made that business, and we trying to make it better and better. And that actually, when it happens, it make us have a like stronger kind of relation. Oh. And but if it's the other way around, that
you
would
also
be a disaster,
have to.
Right?
I think you also have to really figure out.
So,
I don't know if it's going
to
be relationship advice. You have to figure out how to argue as well. I think we're pretty good if we do have a disagreement.
I think it applies to business partners generally.
I think you have to know who each other are. You have to understand what are the triggers. And if you do get into a conflict, there has to be one of you that can squash it. Because I've got a high level of emotional intelligence. No, I'm just saying that I can read if Carlos is frustrated with something going on. Maybe there's something frustrating in the shop or something that he's unhappy with. I can, even from the way he looks, I can tell that something's a problem.
Yeah,
so I'll be like, what's the problem? Let me sort it. Let me figure it out before it kind of turned into a bigger thing.
Right.
But it's not easy, honestly.
It's communication. Communication is the key. And sometimes it's hard, but it's like any marriage. But I think in the impact, as I said, at work, if you're working with your partner, has to happen, but either way, negative or positive. But thank God in our case is like very good.
Yeah, because she
did you just get the thumbs up.
Right. Thumbs up for those listening on podcasts. It's beautiful to see a husband and wife duo, a healthy marriage, and you guys make each other laugh. I think that's the most important thing.
There's a lot of humor that's involved in this. Yeah. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
You need to have a good sense of humor.
It makes it or breaks it,
Absolutely. But were you concerned at all before launching the business?
Well,
because
actually,
a lot of businesses do, people do launch businesses as husband and wife, and they work together in the same company and they can't handle it.
Mm.
And it kind of all unravels.
Think we went into this so naively thinking back when we started this. I mean, the original plan was I'll just help you do the setup and the fit out and I'll do
the
that.
Launch, and she will take a step aside. And it was like, not like that, but the business in the beginning, any business is like very, like a baby, like brand new. So
and you don't really know what you're doing.
Mm.
Like, you don't know what you're doing. I mean, for the first year and a half, I really didn't have a clue. But then I suddenly realized the biggest mistake that I personally made operationally with a business, which I think a lot of business owners do, is that you start off, you've stretched yourself financially, we don't have investors, it was all self-funded. And then I was like, I'm going to do everything. I'm going to figure out how to do everything. So I would watch YouTube videos of like search engine optimization and Google Analytics.
Right.
And then be like, I have no idea what I'm doing. Yeah. And then you realize you need to outsource. You need to hire people better than you
if we are
in
not
their specialty.
We'll bring the expertise.
Yeah,
to
and
this.
That was a tipping
this
point
right
for me with the
it.
Business. I was like, I'm trying to learn everything. I don't know how to do it. I don't enjoy it.
Right.
So I'm just going to find people who are really good at it and we'll get them to do it. So there are parts of the business that are outsourced just because either I don't want to do it, I can't do it, or I don't have time to do it.
How has it been since Corona? What is the main challenge you would say right now? You said you're at a tipping point with the business.
I think the business is just busy. It's just busy. It's almost like there's too much work for me and him. And it's about, honestly, I think one of my struggles is recruitment.
And the business is
finding
growing.
Good talent.
The business is growing like so fast that we physically can't take it because I do like 3-4 tasks. She does the same. Like I do like
the quality.
The social media content, educating the barbers technically and controlling the quality of the service in day-to-day basis and all the photo shoots and stuff like that. So also I do it. Plus I cut hair and this with the skin.
And you still cut hair.
Still cutting hair.
And you've got great hair, I have to say. For those listening on podcasts, do check out the video. Carlos has great hair. Francesca, you've got iconic hair.
And actually, he doesn't do my hair, which is a shame. Yeah. I really thought the benefit of having a barbershop was that I'd get free haircuts. But actually, no, I don't let him do my hair.
Sounds like he should be doing your hair.
No, he did it once and it didn't.
Yeah.
No, just stay in the wheelhouse of men's hair. I think women's hair. I think that's a whole different world. So
it's absolutely. But you know what? It's equally difficult to find a good hairdresser for
it
us
really
ladies
is.
As well.
Yeah, I think maybe once
that's
found
the
your
next venture, perhaps.
Never. Never. I think
that was a solid never.
Never. No, because the thing is, this is just my experience, and I think I can say this as a woman. Mm-hmm. I go to salons, and I hear, you know, how other customers are in women's salons compared to how men are in barbershops. And I think
we're more chilled.
Yeah.
We're more chilled. Yeah. And because the thing is, if I don't...
It's a totally different
environment. The
right?
men, yeah. like 90% of men, if they don't like the haircut, they just suck it and like they pay the money and they will never come back again. Or like
True.
Even
yeah.
they will show like a bit of like a facial expression about the frustration that they got. Mm. But women, the hair
women,
is like...
Women will... We,
the hair like, which is like making absolute sense because like it's like...
It's how you look and...
Yeah, yeah it's like, yeah. yeah. And so they
yeah,
cry.
I
and
have lost the, it many a time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And also, neither of us any experience of like women's salons. So
and you have the right,
actually,
to
risk that.
Right.
Whereas, you know, I would never, if I hadn't met him, I wouldn't have been like, oh, I really want to open a barbershop. I wouldn't have.
That would never happen.
Yeah. wouldn't have done it. So.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, it's incredible that you guys are married and running a business together. That was kind of the angle that we were taking today. I mean, you know, I'm struggling to find a partner, let alone run a business with a partner. Seems so far-fetched.
It's quite, we actually, timing-wise, when we got the call from the hotel that they had a unit for us in 2018, I'd found out about 2 days before
in
that I was
June,
pregnant.
June.
Oh,
so
wow.
we were
wow.
doing the whole business setup and
June
actually...
2018.
Yeah, and our son was born in May 2019. We started to fit out the project like a week later.
Yeah, 15
Beautiful.
Months. Yeah.
And I remember having our son
Beautiful.
Tied to me in a carrier shouting at the contractor about the flooring not being level.
Oh,
going,
my gosh.
This is the worst
oh,
time
gosh.
Ever. So our son has kind of grown up with mom and dad in the barbershop, so
and he's gonna be a barber as well.
He's
gonna take over the family business.
Yeah,
he hates having his hair cut.
He did cut my hair once.
Yeah, he doesn't really like it. I think he sees it as a thing that takes mom and dad away.
Yeah,
so he's
he
a bit anti
like
barbershop.
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
So,
that's very sweet.
Yeah.
Who are? I mean, give me an idea about the success behind the business. Was it word of mouth? Was it the customers that you had that came with you?
Combination of things. So location, very important. Skillful staff, very important. The management, which is like includes the quality of the service and like the hospitality.
Touches,
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very important. And that's, and to make it sustainable and consistent, it's actually the key. Because lots of businesses that we saw and we always see actually in the market, they open and they do succeed in the first year or two, but soon after the RO like dips massively because they don't know how to make it sustainable. Because
I think it's a consistency though. You know, I see a lot of businesses, and I spend a lot of time looking at this. I see a lot of businesses in terms of like their presence. Okay, for me. And I don't know if this is just something that I believe in as a person or as a business thing, but we have like a lot of Google reviews, for example.
Mm.
I personally respond to every single person because I feel that if someone takes the time to leave a comment on a business, then you should take the time as a business owner to personally respond to them. Now, it takes me a lot of time, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
across all of our platforms, so across Facebook, Instagram, on TikTok, on Google profile, on our Fresher, which is kind of the booking system, we have, what, maybe 5,000, 6,000 five-star reviews. And
yeah.
I personally respond to every single one.
Every individual
and
one,
even
yeah.
if it's not
Incredible,
a five-star response.
Because that's very, very important.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see so many businesses that have
they
people
just,
saying, I had a five-star experience in
like
business.
Like a reported kind of
and you don't even respond to
yeah.
it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And those are bigger companies with more staff. And
Yes.
I think, so when people do hear about us, if it, word of mouth, the first thing they do is they search, right? CG Barbershop, the first thing that pops up is our Google profile. They look at the reviews, they see the response and go, okay, these aren't bots, these are genuine people.
I see right. the easiest part to open the barbershop is to actually open the barbershop and do that fit out. Everybody can actually get like a interior designer or like a...
Pinterest.
Yeah. You do the gimmicks and you do the interior, like you know, the look and feel and all the branding. But okay, you succeed to attract the client on the chair. But what makes it sustainable and the core of the whole relation or like what you're doing is the actual service. If the industrial look and feel and everything is beautiful.
I think building the team is really tricky as well, honestly. I mean, for me at the moment, I'm doing a lot of recruitment at the moment, which I find very painful.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that because it's a very interesting point. Yeah.
And the thing is that I think because we've been living in the UAE a while. I've been here nearly 16 years now. Carlos has been here like 10 years. And you know, when we opened the business, I remember sitting in our old apartment and I said to him, let's be the bosses that we wish we had. Let's not treat people like we've been treated, where we've been paid late or disrespected or not given opportunity or for whatever reason. And I think that I really genuinely don't want people to feel like I felt in previous.
Exactly. That's why when we're actually doing recruitment right now, technicality, we know for sure that it's going to take 3 to 6 months for any candidate or any new papa that join us to get to our level of, and it's some people, they do it even faster because they're easy learner. But the most important part for us right now is the mindset.
Because
some people, they have like the skill, but they are like bad news.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And we're running out of time. One last question. What are you looking for when it comes to talent, good talent?
I think we're looking for people who, for me, turn up on time for an interview. It's a basic requirement, but it seems it's one that's fleeting.
The best answer for that is the four P's. Yeah, personality, punctuality, professionalism, and presentation.
Punctuality in Dubai is a difficult ask.
Especially Egyptians.
Yeah, it is. No, honestly,
Arabs in general.
Yeah, I think we're just, honestly, it's about someone that wants to join a really good team, that wants to work hard, have fun. But also, there is progression. We're a young company, we are growing. And I think having that mindset of not just, you know, it's a job, I'll come in at this time, can I leave at this time? But it's about, you know, having a bit of initiative. And I feel that.
And passion, yeah.
Yeah, with a lot of the candidates we're seeing at the moment, it's.
We have some barbers that they get paid. I'm very, very confident, like with a confidence, I can say like the most paid barbers on the planet. Mm. But when barbers comes to like asking for money, as I said before, money always runs faster. He's going to lose the job. But someone, he comes there, he wants to work for us or like with us. And he had the passion to learn, to improve. So it's different. But 90% of the candidates, they come like they just money motivated.
First question, what's the salary?
Right.
What is the salary?
What's the salary? What's my days off? Lunch, what's my working hours?
Mm-hmm. And lunch break. Mm-hmm. Before what's work?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very concerning, isn't it?
No, it really is because, you know, we get a lot of people applying. We get many people send CVs. We arrange interviews. They don't even turn up, which seems wild to me that you're trying to get a job, but you need to kind of turn up. I'll finish on this story, which is my favorite.
Yeah.
We had someone scheduled for an interview and they turned up and said, I'm sorry, I'm a bit late. Yeah, they were a day late.
Oh dear.
Yeah, so that like a whole lunar cycle late. They're like, sorry, I'm a bit late. It's 24 hours.
Wow.
So,
I mean, were they late but worth the wait?
No, because we actually don't. I have a very strict rule. If you're late, then I'm not seeing anyone.
Yeah. Well, then we would never work together, Francesca. I'm a Dubai kid, born and raised.
Listen, I have to say that unfortunately, Carlos is the latest person on planet
Earth. No, I'm always late. 5-10 minutes. I don't know why.
Like 25, 30.
No, 10.
20.
10, I think we have no concept of time, Carlos, people like us. We live freely. What is time?
Exactly.
What is time?
I said to her, it's
my
culture.
He's late
for my culture. Do you want to change it? Like, I wake up 6 o'clock in the morning, but I have to be in the show at 10.
It's my culture. Do you want to change it?
Like,
I love that excuse. I need to use that excuse.
It's my culture. Like, that's how we grew. Yeah, even in Egypt, like, I'm sorry, like, but even big corporates and such like Uber or like massive corporates in Egypt, they have totally different style because like even engineers in Egypt, they never go from 9 to 4 or 9 to 6. But what they say, okay, you got that project in a deadline, you have to finish the task. You do it about 4 o'clock in the morning.
I mean, that's what matters, right?
Yes.
As long as the
while
job is
eating,
done.
While you're eating,
Francesca is not convinced. What a fascinating conversation, honestly.
Thank you so much for having us.
What a fun conversation this was as well. I really wish we had more time because I can see this conversation going in so many different interesting directions.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having us. And when it's so much fun, it gives you funds.
so much fun. It gives you fun.
Snoop Dogg said that.
Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
Shout out to Snoop Dogg, the OG.
Not money motivated. It's just fun.
On that note, I hope one day to see Snoop Dogg at your barbershop.
I would very much enjoy that.
Shout out. We'll tag him on the vertical that comes out from this this episode.
Thank you so for much. Having us. And it was a great experience. And let's see you later.
We'll see you for sure. Thank you, guys. Stream us on smashy.tv. Follow us on social media or listen to us wherever you get your podcasts. And see you tomorrow.